Hello and welcome back to Punani Productions podcast. This is your host, Queen Layla. As you know, last week I did not put up an episode, but it's all for the best because now I have a very, very special guest for you. My very, very dear friend, Miss Renee Imperato, aka Mama Francine, and she is here with me today to share her story. So before we start, I'd like everybody to take a deep breath and remember to keep a waysail on your face as you are here in the portal to sexual freedom. And for those of you that don't remember, wei means slight. Xiao means to smile in Chinese. So wei xiao means slight smile. So with that slight smile, let's welcome here my queen mother. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, Queen Layla. I guess where I'm going to start is when I got out of the military in 1971, I was already a political activist. I had been a Vietnam veteran, and in Vietnam, I really turned against the war because you honestly could see what the war was about. I came home, and I joined some political organizations. I was in the anti-war movement, where I met Leslie Feinberg, trans man, assigned female at birth, but not female. And I really began to talk with Leslie and start to understand all the issues of different genders and of gender identity, gender expression, and understanding all those who fall under the umbrella of gender illusion. In other words, we blur the line of gender illusion. And around 1974, I had started driving a taxi in 72. And I actually was just working. I was born and raised in Hell's Kitchen, so I knew most of New York, especially Manhattan. And I then started working some clubs, infamous clubs, that were then known, mostly the word was drag queen, and everybody was a drag queen. If you were femme, you didn't have all these delineations of identity and definitions. You didn't have it then. So what you had was, you had a multiplicity of people that I started to meet who would just, first they would just get in my taxi. I never even went into the club. And then I started getting like really interested in trans women. Emotionally, culturally, and sexually. And I sort of, that sort of led me to becoming a so-called, I didn't realize at that time that what I was an unconscious male impersonator myself. That's the term I like to use. So you could say I was sort of a boyfriend of many, many trans women, many. And in 1976, one of the clubs that I had been working, which was the 220 Club, it
as
has been
performer?
Said it was...
As a performer?
No, no. No, first I started working the taxi line.
Oh, okay.
Right? And I would get people come out, and before you know it, I'd take them to where they want to go. And most of the time I wound up parking and went up to their place. I couldn't even count how many of those episodes there were. And then I started going into the 220. I had gone into the Gilded Grape. The 220, we think, is the first after-hours transgender club. Now, that we know, because there may have been clubs that really have not been recognized or recorded historically. Most of the people who, it was very multinational. I might even say that probably most of the people were of color. It was located on Houston Street. And I was working the graveyard shift, which I seem to still be working. And people started getting in, and then before you know it, I was just hanging out in the club for years. And I'd pick up fares there. I'd make business driving a lot of people home. I wasn't a sex worker then, right? But I did have a lot of sex. I
mean, but you were already trans.
No, I was not.
Not yet. Okay, so
I, or you could say I didn't know I was.
Until maybe this moment.
I never...
After being a boyfriend to the trans
Yeah,
women.
Well, I'll tell you how it went. I could fill in... I'll jump ahead. Now, I will say that I worked in the 220 Club from 75 to 77.
And how old were you then?
I was 26 or 27.
Oh, wow. So almost 50.
When I was working in the club. Now, when I started hanging out at the Gilded Grape, GG Knickerbockers, the 55 Speed Limit, these are all clubs that existed in the mid to late 70s. Now, when I started hanging out at the Gilded Grape, we're talking 73. So I was 25. Maybe even 24, 25. You know, somewhere in there.
You had already came back from the Army.
Oh yeah, I was. I came back from Vietnam in 70. And then I was actually stationed upstate here in New York for the remaining 10 months. Got out in 71.
Well, so you were very young when you were in the Army.
Yeah, I went in. I was 19.
Wow.
What I wound up doing was I worked in the 220, and then unfortunately there was this racist incident that happened a few blocks from the club. And another worker in the club and me went to protect black people on these basketball courts. They were attacked by racists, you know, from Greenwich Village, you know, could happen. And evidently what evolved was I was now too controversial. So I was still going to the club, but I wasn't an employee. I wasn't working there. I still knew everybody. I still went to the club for years.
And you still go to the club.
Yeah, right. Well, now that one's not there, but some of the people who of that time are still around, a few. And here's what happened. So in 77, I broke up with the mother of my children. And then I was driving a taxi. I was working for the city of New York. And it was kind of like, I was having lots of sex, but I wasn't working.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you what happened. Something that must have reemerged from when I put my mother's lingerie on like when I was 13 or 14, came back. And I was in Paris. I was living in Paris. I really moved to Paris in 87. And commuted back and forth for 5 years. I worked there. I can't tell you how many different jobs. And I remember one day, it was probably a month after I married the person that I did. And I just started putting her clothes on. And then I started taking her makeup and putting it on. And all I know is it got me very excited, emotionally and sexually. So that was probably, now we're talking 88, 89. So by this time, right?
Yeah.
I'm like 39, 40 years old.
In your prime.
I didn't know it was my prime. I didn't know, I mentioned this to you before, that there are some of us, not everybody has the same sexual energy or the same libido. However, I was so naive that honestly, in my 20s and most of my 30s, you know, I thought everybody was like me. I thought everybody was equipped like me. And then right around, I remember 1990, and I was crashing at a friend's house in Greenwich Village. And I had just been in San Francisco for Halloween. That Halloween was the first day that I went out in the street in San Francisco in the Halloween parade. Man, I had these patent leather pumps, really sexy. And I put on all this, I never forget putting on the stockings and the garter belt and the dress and the bra. And I went out and we went to a lot of different clubs. There was a club in San Francisco. It was a nomadic club. It was called Clubstitute. Mm-hmm. Prostitute club. Mm-hmm. And that's where I hooked up with some other trans girls. And that was really when my sex work started. In fact, you know what you could say? You could actually say that my first paid sex work was actually before the taxi. Because the whole time that I had driven from the early 70s to the early 80s, I never did sex in a taxi, right? That really started like 1990. See, I've only been doing this 30 years now. I know, people laugh, it's 30 years, you know. And it was me and a couple of other hot girls, boy, and really the sweetest. And we started, and you know, I just want to say something, what people have to understand that I know you know so well, Queen Layla. Sex work is fucking work.
That's right.
You know, what
blow job is job.
Absolutely.
Sex work is work.
You can't just have a cock in your mouth.
It's passion.
You gotta know what to do with it.
Exactly. And you know? I'm sure you do.
My problem is I can't stop.
But now, so, you are Mama Francine,
right?
So known more as a professional mistress.
That's
rather
correct.
Than before,
right,
where you were...
I was just Renee.
You were Renee, Miss Renee Imprado.
And I had just really started ending my dead name, which you don't want to know, right? You don't need to know.
What?
My dead name, my name before Renee Imprado.
You don't need to share that if you...
Well, Imprado is my family, my mother's maiden name. And Renee was the name my mother actually wanted to call me, mm-hmm, that my biological father, who was a horrible person. He supported Hitler to during World War II. He'd go into Jewish stores in New York City and go see the aisle. My stepfather was almost the complete opposite. You know, do you ever meet people who they're not political, but they're just good people? That was my stepfather, who I regard as my real father. If I refer to him again, I'm not even going to use the word step. So, in San Francisco, we started devising. We put on these shows for these guys. And I mean, listen, we did pre-production. You know, I'd meet at Ollie's house, right? And we'd write out scripts. We'd write up scenarios like, I'll give you a few examples. A mother and daughter who need money. To get money, they sign up to try experimental drugs. Right? Except the experimental drugs have side effects. And one of the side effects in one of the scenarios is they grew cocks.
What are these scenarios for?
Oh, these scenarios were for clients who would be watching.
Oh, this was when you made videos a long time ago.
You know what? We weren't filming. We would do, you know, this is like 90. We didn't film any. Now I think, my goodness.
So what do you think has changed most from sex work now and sex like then?
Okay.
The internet?
Oh, the internet. We can always go back to other stuff. So after San Francisco, I went back to New York, and now I started driving a cab again. Mm-hmm. I really had kind of stopped during the whole Europe phase. And I picked up this guy who was some executive producer on Broadway. And it was a slow night. And remember, this is 1990. And he said, well, how's the night gone? I said, it's a shitty night. He says, well, how'd you like to add a quick 200? Which, you know, 230 years ago, that would be more than four now. Well, I don't know. I said, okay. He had the biggest cock in the world. It was a beautiful cock, okay? And basically, all I did was a blowjob. And boy, instead of being $50 in the hole to make up my rent, I was now in the black, $150 in 20, 25 minutes. And I said, you know what? This is interesting. And by the way, let me just say this. I had already gotten to know a lot of the trans girls working like by the meat market, 16th. You know these places that you see now, Chelsea, those are all abandoned buildings until really about 2010, let me tell you. There was nobody in those buildings around there. And
was your office.
Well, it wasn't my office then. It was about to become it. But I got a lot of those girls. You know how I met them? They hailed me to get away from the cops. And believe me, Renee knew what to do. And then I started becoming friends with them. You know, I'd even like, you know, they'd see them and I'd say, hey, I got a soda, you know. And we'd hang out and I learned shit. And then I'll never forget, there was this one, the second one that really convinced me was, he was a guy, I guess, and his girlfriend, and he wanted to take his girlfriend home, and then he wanted me to take him to 23rd Street between Lexington and 3rd, right by the post office there. So I pull over to the curb, and he says, so, you know, I like to dabble a little bit in bisexuality. Now, this was like the biggest fucking cocksucker in the world he was talking to. And So I said, well, that's interesting. And he says to me, this is not too long after the other one. You know, I don't know, a couple weeks, maybe a month, maybe. I can't quite remember. And he says, so how about if I give you $150 and all you gotta do is put your hand in my pants and grab my ass? That was it. No, I mean, I'm telling you, I don't even know if I did it for 5 minutes. Right? If somebody asked me now, that would be about $350. Somebody asked me now to put my hand in their pants and scratch it and fondle it for $350, I'd fucking do it. And I'm telling you, I don't think it was more than 5 minutes. And then after that, I started saying, you know what? This is a way to make money. So there used to be a strip, 53rd Street, between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. Tons of male prostitutes. But of course, I was already emerging as a femme. And by the way, I would get in the taxi and doll up, right? And so there was this guy on the sidewalk, and did he want a cab? And then there was this other guy, a boy, pretty boy, Adonis, frankly, who, so we wound up competing for this client. And he won. I lost out. And I was like, right? So anyway, he gets the John, because most of the words then were inclined. It was trick or John.
Trick or John. Yeah. I think that still lives on today.
Yeah.
But I'd really like to know more about your journey and way, like how you said, through driving and meeting more trans women, that you started to dress up and become more femme.
Right.
So there's all this talk now about transitioning and not coming off, or it doesn't really matter anymore. The last time you were talking to me about gender queer and nonconformity, can you speak a little bit more on your thoughts on being queer and,
or gender nonconforming?
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
I will. Let me just say this. First of all, trans women and older trans women can remember this. Younger trans women are not faced with this, but in the early days, people were. It was kind of like this whole thing about passing. And a lot of people were like, they wanted to be stealth. They wanted to be like you couldn't tell. I mean, you know, forget people have their forehead shaved down, their shoulders narrowed, or they have their bottom rib removed to have more of an hourglass figure. And that was the age of, I'm a woman, I was born in the wrong body. See, we don't need, that's passé now, because you were never born in the wrong body, because your genitalia and your appearance, your clothing, your hair, does not define your gender. Your gender is here. It's just like a lot of people will
Where's
say.
Where's here?
People means it starts see. In your head. So, what I've had people say to me, young people, I'm thinking of beginning my transition. And I said, if you weren't beginning your transition, you wouldn't have just said what you said. Because it begins in your mind and how you perceive and how you act and how you feel about things in the street. Everything is, that's got something to do with what your gender is or no gender. Because I'll tell you what, I come across people and I either can't tell what gender they are, which is, or they don't have a gender. So what's happened now is that with the blossoming of people who are gender nonconforming, which is everywhere now. I go to little towns. It's a beautiful thing. And it's really liberated trans women, trans femme, whatever you want to, you know, define us from. It's liberated us from the word passing. Something I never really wanted to do. So all these younger people now who have emerged have frankly liberated older trans women who could be 20, 30 years older than them. And this is a phenomenon and a reality that has been long overdue to be expressed. And the only reason all these emerging things didn't emerge till now is because of the oppression. You know, there's people, you know what they do? I'll tell you, Layla. They live in a prison cell the size of their bodies. You remember what I said to you about being an unconscious male impersonator? You know what's worse? Being a conscious male impersonator and then trying to perform. I did that.
So the whole time you felt female, but you were acting as male because that's the societal responsibilities, and all your life you went to the army, you got married, had children. That was all those societal limiting beliefs that you got rid of to embrace who you truly were.
They were subliminal before the military. And, but let me just say that sometimes when I talk about this, I get choked up because it reminds me. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It reminds me of when I was ashamed of my realness. You know, when you would, here we are as I like to say, enlightened people, being intimidated and ordered around culturally by the ignorant. I'm not saying they're all bad people. I'm not saying they're all horrible people. They have been brainwashed and conditioned in all this shit, right? And there was a time when I walked down the darkest streets. I walked against traffic and saw a car, if it passed me and wanted to come after me, they would have to drive down the street backwards, which would often be impossible. And I would run from people who had clubs, knives, right? My answer to that was, get your own weapons, honey. And I got my own weapons, various different ones, guns. You know, I had an axe in my purse, a professional slingshot, knives. I had any collection of things that we're talking late 80s, early 90s, always had it with me, always.
But not anymore.
I still have mace.
Okay.
That I have right about 10 feet from me. And I still have Lucille, who is the axe, under my driver's seat in the van right now. But what eventually happened is, and thank goodness for me, because believe me, I know some trans women now who almost kind of still let the ignorant dictate how you live, which means you're a dead, really, you're like, it's like you're dead. Because you know what it is with our love in the LG, in the, basically in the trans GNC community. I mean, we could talk about LGBT, but I'm gonna just talk about my specific corner of my community. That we were in love. And our love, it's not better than other love. It's not superior. It's not elitist, but it is more enlightened. And I don't say that to be egotistical or like a, you know, superiority person at all, but it is more enlightened. As the 90s went on, I began to stop giving a shit in stages. And to the point, and you know what's funny? I cannot exactly give you a time when it happened, but it was almost like autopilot. You know, like I may have mentioned this to you at another time, that for instance, if I was walking down the street and on the side of the street where I was walking was a construction site, and say the construction workers were eating their lunch or hanging out, I would walk across the street. Even though my destination was on the side of the street I was on, I would walk across the street and walk past them, but on the opposite side of the street to avoid them. That's like being in jail. I did that, right?
And that was the shame.
Yeah.
Still. But now you walk proudly.
Oh, now I can tell you what.
When did you finally, you know, you were talking about how it saddens you to think about before, but you were able to let go of that shame and stigma. And that's why I asked you here today also, because I really admire you. And we are all here listening and learning from what you're sharing. And who were some people that helped you to realize your own worth and your power that helped you to end that shame and stigma belief in yourself and to unleash your own power?
Okay. I just want to finish by saying that now, and I'm not even in the physical shape I was in 30 years ago, I do the exact opposite with a construction site. I will cross the street deliberately. Even though my destination isn't there, and I will walk right by them and wait for them to say one fucking word. You know what that is? That's freedom. And you know what? If you don't take any chances, you'll never be free in your life. So that's when one day, you know what it was? I said, fuck this. I ain't walking on, you know? And so what I did was I didn't cross the street. And then that evolved to going out of my way to walk past them. And that's when I officially joined the club called, not only do I not give a fuck what you think, watch me not give a fuck. And as Liz Tu from China in the 10th century said, you remember, you know that. So I took that quote and sort of, you know, made it a little bit more relevant to my community, which is, when you worry what other people think of you, you will always be their prisoner. Time for jailbreak. The people who really influenced me, Leslie Feinberg was an influence on me for years and years and years. And I was actually friendly with Leslie for over 15 years before, you know, I came out as a trans femme. I wonder even now, you know, Leslie's gone. Leslie died in 2014. But I wonder even if Leslie had thoughts about what was my sexuality and how it emerged. But, so I would have to put Leslie in there, certainly, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who, I mean, you can't find a courage greater than the one they portrayed. I mean, can you imagine hustling at the ages of 14 and 15 in 1965 on 42nd Street? talk about challenges, right? And they made me proud of what I am. And I'm not a religious person anymore. I used to be. But they're almost like my saints. You know what I mean? They are, I would have to say, those three. Leslie Feinberg, Sylvia Rivera, Marsha P. Johnson, the three greatest influences in my life on the transgender question, without a doubt.
And what would you like to share with our listeners? What's the last message you would like to leave with them? How can they continue to embrace themselves and discover their sexuality and realize sexual freedom?
Okay. Now, I think we're not speaking specifically to people who are just having their gender in question. We're talking about
everyone. Yeah.
That's why one of my favorite words, as you see I'm tattooed on my hand, realness. Everybody has their own realness. What may be my realness is not yours, but so many people have all this in their head, all this expression, all these wants, all these things that they want to say, that they want to do, that they want to go to. And it becomes inhibited by the ills of societal pressure, right? And some people, I think what happens is, if I was talking to those people now, you know what I do? I don't actually give advice. Some people give too much advice. They'll say, you gotta cut off your tits. You gotta have tits. No, that doesn't define your gender. Your gender is here. And whether you want to do it or not is your right. Don't get me wrong. I don't tell people. I tell people what I do. But what I do tell people is, whatever you feel, whatever you want, don't suppress it. Don't, because you will forever be, and there are. I know people now. They're prisoners in they're in a prison cell that's their body.
Right. We create our own suffering. So
yes.
Be real to who you are.
Wow. And you know what? I mean, here I was in my late 30s and I was like, I finally knew. I knew what I was. I knew that I was a trans femme. And I remember I used to say to myself, oh my God, I'm 38, 39 years old. Why did I wait so long? I'm such a late bloomer. Now, I've met people in their 70s.
It's never too late.
I even met a woman who actually had, you know, what I call, you know, they call it, what's the word that we hear? Oh, gender reassignment surgery, which really is not accurate because you already are that gender. You're just sculpting your body to what you want it to be, right? So you know what I call it? And this is a layperson's term. It's not, I don't even know if it's in the medical encyclopedia. I call it corrective surgery. And so that's what I tell people, that what you have to do, I think the first thing you really have to do is you have to not give a fuck what people think. You really do. And you know what? It's easier said than done. People have, I mean, look at trans people who've lost their families. Mothers and fathers, they hadn't talked to them in 20, 30 years. Thrown out of their houses physically. I mean, talk about being isolated from society. Why are there so many mental health problems for trans people? It's not because they're trans. It's because of the oppression the overwhelming oppression of living in that. Now, the point is, if I don't live in that, and I want to be so-called safer by modifying my appearance, the problem is I'm a dead person. I'm dead. If I can't live like this, then I'm dead. You know, my daughter, just last year, said to me, "Daddy, I worry that you could be killed. That's what I worry. I wonder that you could die. I mean, you know how I dress and how I walk down the street." And I told my daughter, I said, "Honey, if I modify my appearance, if I change my expression to something that's not me, I am dead already. I'm just walking, but I'm dead."
That's why I love you so much, because you just don't give a fuck and you wear whatever the fuck you want and you do whatever the fuck you want. And I want to say thank you so much for being here today. I know that your story inspired a lot of people. So we're just going to end it here. Thank you, Mama Francine. Be sure to find her on Twitter.
That's your Twitter thank handle. You. Thank you.
Yes, I will put all of that in the information. So,
yeah, and Night you. Flirt, don't forget.
Yes, what are all your handles? Please share now.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Night Flirt. They wouldn't allow me to use the word mama. So I'm
all right,
on
I'll add all of those
M. Francine.
Excellent. I will add all of those down below. Thank you again, Mama Francine, and to all my friends on the podcast.
Okay.
Bye-bye for now.